Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Founders Club Radio.
Welcome to the Founders Club, where each week we talk to the founders and leaders of great private companies. I'm your host, John Coffin, and this morning I'm joined in the studio by TJ Calloway, the co-founder and CEO of Onward Reserve. Good morning.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Tell us about Onward Reserve.
So Onward Reserve is a retail business that we started in September of 2012 and have since opened some more locations. We've got a great catalog, great website, and cater to a casual lifestyle.
So how did you get your start, TJ?
That's a funny question that I get a lot, and it makes absolutely no sense. I was a banker. I was a finance major at UGA and did the banking thing for a little while, and just wasn't for me. And I was looking for an opportunity, and we really initially wanted to have a robust e-commerce platform to sell basically everything that I liked to buy as a consumer, which was a lot of specialty brands that are typically only carried in independent specialty stores. And there really wasn't a good online platform where you could buy all those brands in one place. So that's, I left the bank, to strike out and do that a few years ago. And it's, I've learned a ton and, I've had a blast. We've, kind of morphed into what we are now.
And now, so you started in the e-commerce space. Talk about that morphing into more of a traditional bricks and mortar retail. I guess you got your start on the retail side, specifically in Athens, Georgia.
Well, we actually launched our website a few months before we opened the store.
Okay.
And never had any intentions of doing brick and mortar retail. You hear about Amazon taking over the world, et cetera. And, that was our vision, that we were going to be e-commerce. It was going to be, slim, lean, mean, low overhead, and come in and really make a splash. And we did. But what we found and what I found early on was that in a growing digital age, there's really a desire from a consumer standpoint to still have an authentic experience, whether it be flipping through a paper catalog before you go online online to make a purchase, or whether it be, coming into one of our stores and talking to a salesperson and having a beer and just kind of hanging out. There's really a desire to make a legitimate connection with the brand. And that's, so we opened Athens just kind of by accident in 2012. I was walking downtown to meet a friend who was in town for a drink, and saw this spot had just come on the market. And I called my founding partner and said, look, if we ever want to try retail brick and mortar, this is the spot to do it. And we,
and there's actually brick and mortar in the inside building,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's a really cool space.
That is a cool space.
So we, cliche, we sat across the street on a napkin and figured out this is what we need to do in sales to break even. And we figured if we can break even, it's worth doing because of the foot traffic, there in Athens. And it's been a phenomenal location for us ever since. So that kind of started it.
So that was really kind of the anchor market, so to speak. And now you're in 7 markets. Walk us through that growth.
So we opened Athens in September of 2012, right before the first home football game. And then in August of 2013, we opened in Buckhead in a temporary location to kind of test the market. And then in March of 2014, we moved into our permanent store in Buckhead, and then Charlotte, North Carolina, Chattanooga, Tennessee, and Thomasville, Georgia in 2014. And then thus far in 15, we've opened our first national flagship store in Georgetown up in Washington, D.C., and then we opened our second location in Atlanta down at Pont City Market. So it's been a crazy, fun couple of years, but we're having a blast.
That's an incredible growth trajectory. It's really remarkable. What you know, with retail, there's so much that goes on behind the scenes from an infrastructure standpoint. You know, as you've grown to seven different markets, much into really a regional presence from a very local presence, talk about that, those infrastructure challenges or opportunities that you found.
I mean, there's definitely, I think the challenge and the advantage for me personally is that I didn't have a retail background at all. So we were kind of, you know, trying to figure this out as we went. And so it really is, that sounds like a disadvantage, but I think it gives you the opportunity to come at things with a new, fresh perspective. And, you know, I've had a lot of fantastic mentors that have helped me along the way. But it's been fun to just build the foundation for a really meaningful business, so that as we grow, we're able to keep up with the demand. And if, you know, if a opportunity comes up to open a store next month, I'm confident that we've got the platform to roll it out really quickly with not much lead time. And that's what's enabled us to grow, is that we've got the, you know, the right people and the right infrastructure in place to really, I think we're certainly best in class in our small lifestyle space.
So, you know, this is one of the incredible things about being an entrepreneur. You know, you're creating something from nothing, but there's a lot of risk and sleepless nights involved sometimes too. Brings back to that point where you kind of said in your mind, I think this is going to work. You know, was there a moment that you can kind of think back on and say, you know, I think we've really got something here that's going to work. And, you know, I can.
I'll tell you, there was a moment. I've got the email printed. I probably need to frame it, put it in my office. I've got an email that I got from an unnamed superior of mine at an unnamed fantastic banking institution, you know, about, I need this tomorrow at this time and blah, blah, blah. And I just, you know, I was like, my heart's not in this. And I got to find, and it's not, you know, I had a fantastic experience in the banking world, met a lot of great people, wouldn't be where I am without it. But if your heart's not in something, it's kind of tough. And so, you know, I thought, man, this looks like it could really work. Took the plunge, and I get the question a lot, like, have you ever regretted it, or how, you know, whatever. And there truly has not been one second where I've ever regretted it. There's certainly been some sleepless nights. There's certainly been an enormous amount of, you know, stress, and I wouldn't call it anxiety, but just excitement. But I've never regretted it. It's been a blast. I think, so my shipping manager and I, who was one of my first hires, joke about it all the time, is that, you know, and hopefully as we've gotten more substantial, this isn't a risk anymore. But early on, we would say, you know, if this all blows up tomorrow, we'd do it again. I mean, that's how much fun we had building it.
So you've talked about lifestyle. Tell us a little bit. I know it's hard to do on the radio, but tell us about your brand, about, you know, the vibe of the magazine, or, you know, as well as the store. You know, what's the unique differentiator of Onward Reserve?
So the brand, you know, we started as an independent specialty retail shop, really as a, you know, a curator of a lot of great third-party brands. Mm-hmm. And
so currently you have over 75 brands across
a lot of different platforms.
Right.
And really the easiest way to describe my vision for the brand is it's just a store that I would like to shop in.
Right.
And it caters to who I am as a person. You know, a lot of people would describe that lifestyle as a Southern lifestyle. A lot of people, but, you know, I don't know that it's necessarily Southern. It's basically me, which is I'm looking for quality, but I'm not looking for, you know, anything too crazy from a fashion perspective. I mean, we're not reinventing the wheel. We're just we've created a fantastic retail atmosphere. It's casual. We've got, you know, you walk in, there's a leather couch, and there's a, you know, very welcoming salespeople. You're offered a beer or a Coke, and then the product is second to none. I mean, we carry some of the product that we develop and manufacture is something we're really proud of. everything from, you know, great flannel shirts to just basic khaki pants, phenomenal footwear, belts, other accessories. And then we bring in best in class third party brands, such as, you know, Barber jackets and Shinola watches, which is a cool story out of Detroit. We sell Peter Millar on our website and that kind of stuff. So it's really just a collection of what I want to buy. And right. I think the fun thing for us is we don't go, you know, there's little segments of the apparel market and of the lifestyle market where you're, you know, you're either a golf shop or you're a fishing shop or a hunting shop or you're a, you know, or you're a haberdashery. And we kind of into all those different markets and pulling kind of the best two or three things from each. And we even go to the gift show in New York, which typically would just be like ladies gift shop items. But we kind of curate that entire lifestyle for that guy that's not necessarily a diehard fisherman or a diehard golfer or a diehard quail hunter, but he's kind of me. He likes to do a little bit of all this stuff. So it's been fun.
That's great. You mentioned briefly the expansion of your own brand, and you've really kind of seen significant success in that over the last couple of years. Talk about that early development, how you've gone into that and how that helps your business.
I mean, it's been a goal and a vision for us for quite some time. It gives us the ability to create from scratch whatever it is that we want, which is really fun. The creative side of the business is one of the more fun aspects for me. But it's been humbling how well received it's been, and I think it's because we're coming at it from a really authentic place. I mean, we're trying to create great core products that people are going to enjoy and they're going to last a long time, and they're, you know, a great quality and a great value. And it's been cool. I mean, it's, you know, we've now got our products in all of our stores, and what's really exciting is opening in a market like Georgetown where, you know, you're competing. We're across the street from Fry Boot and Patagonia, and we're down the street from Ralph Lauren and Vineyard Vines and some of these fantastic retailers. And the performance of our label in markets like that is really exciting.
And so how do you, you know, part of that is kind of really getting at seeing a trend and then taking advantage of it. Talk about that creative process. I'm sure you and your team kind of sit down and really kind of think through that a lot. But there's an enormous amount of creativity that goes into that.
It is, and I've certainly got a creative streak. I still have a big hand in the design of all of our stores. Although, thankfully, have got a fantastic wingman on that now. In a girl named Jean Robbins, who was went to Georgia with me. But on the product side, there's a Virginia Johnson, who's our creative director, and I kind of sit down with Christy, who runs our product development side, and we sit down and talk about this. You know, from my banking background, I never thought I would have serious meetings about, you know, what the color of the season is going to be. I didn't really know that was a thing.
What is the color of the season, by the way?
If I recall, I think it's somewhere in the, there's a Majolica blue that rings a bell. And then we're working on fall 2016 now, and your guess is as good as mine about what the hot ticket color is going to be, but we've got our bet that you'll find out about when the catalog comes out this time next year. The creative side's fun, but what's great for us is we're really not trying to reinvent the wheel. We're just trying to put a fun enough spin on core items that our guy's going to want. We're not trying to do anything too crazy. But we are putting our little spin and our little touches on, your conservative guy's wardrobe to make him, he may not even realize he's doing it, but he looks a little cooler than he did this time last year.
There you go. And as you build out your private label, how do you, where do you source from? And
it's all over the place. Some of the best, you know, the big, there's a big debate in our industry right now about made in America versus non. And, you know, we do some stuff here. We've got some footwear goods that come out of Brazil. We've got some leather goods that are made here in America. We've got, you know, Pima cotton from Peru. We've got some wovens that are done in Honduras. We, you know, it's really all over the place. But what we really are trying to find is the right, you know, the right intersection of quality and value. And, you know, when it's possible to make things in America, it's great. But I think a lot of people that are just trying to blindly say we're going to make everything in America, it's, you know,
you don't always get the best.
You don't always get the best. Yeah. I mean, you know, Brazil's been known for, and like Argentina's been known for leather goods forever. And, you know, they make a great product. And at the end of the day, I mean, even when we're sourcing from overseas, it's creating jobs here in Atlanta, right, on the design front, on the distribution front, on the retail front. And everything we're doing is, you know, helping here more than anywhere else. So that's an interesting debate. And we do a little line in the fall called the Patriot Collection, where we, you know, there's still some fantastic, in the woven shirt category, for example, there's still some fantastic domestic manufacturers. And we do a little line, in the fall, kind of as a nod to the Made in America crowd. But, you know, that shirt retails for $165 instead of $98.50 just because of the cost associated with, you know, with manufacturing here.
Right. Many of the companies that that are on similar growth paths as you are going through that local to regional or regional to national kind of growth aspiration. How do you think about, where do you go next? You know, as you do market research, what are some of the critical factors for you?
We've been enabled to grow the way we have and to really bootstrap the business for the most part. We've had to find the right deals. I mean, we've gotten great real estate deals, and that is one of the 10 full-time jobs that I have. It's just, you know, watching markets and trying to find the right opportunity. So it's not quite the laid out roadmap that you would imagine. I mean, there's a handful of markets we're looking at any given time. And when the right opportunity presents itself, we're ready to jump on it. So
is it more of a, you need foot traffic, you need, you know, just density of other kind of high-end retailers? What are some of the factors that you think about?
That's what's kind of fun about it, is that it is 100% dependent on the market. Mm-hmm. Every market is totally different. Every customer base is totally different. You know, Georgetown, it was a big focus for us to have Georgetown open. And really, Georgetown was going to be our second store right out of Athens.
Really? Okay.
But it took us, you know, over a year to find the right opportunity. And, you know, Georgetown was a great national flagship store. It puts us on the map as a legitimate retailer. And that's very foot traffic driven, but it's also very, you know, in the industry, you call it marketing budget storage, because most of those, you know, Ralph Lauren or, you know, Patagonia, Fry Boot, you know, they're coming in there and paying whatever just to say they have a store in Georgetown. So we don't have the luxury of a marketing budget store. So we had to wait for an opportunity where we could actually operate a profitable business. But that, you know, so that's a foot traffic play. Athens is and always will be just our authentic home. There's a lot of foot traffic there, but I think we're also a destination. You know, Buckhead is totally a destination store. There's no real natural foot traffic there. So it just depends. Yeah. Totally depends. And really what we can do with a space itself is almost more important than being in, you know, in Atlanta. If you wanted the best foot traffic, you'd go you know, open a store in Lenox or something. But I feel like you lose a lot of the authenticity of who you are when you just pop into a mall.
Right. You've made such great strides just over the last couple of years with building the brand. How does that, how do you, what are you, where are you really going, from there? You know, you have the catalog, which is incredible, but talk a little bit about advertising, marketing, you know, how do you bring all the pieces together?
Our marketing strategy is to do more of what's working and do less of what's not working.
So there's a good healthy bit of trial and error
exactly.
in there.
Okay. As with any entrepreneur, I think, I mean, part of it is just, you know, throwing spaghetti against the wall and seeing what sticks. We've had a great partnership with Garden and Gun magazine. That was one of our big early bets. It's certainly not a cost effective venue for a startup, but you know, it was a great partnership that got us on the map. We've done a lot of you know, we're with our e-commerce foundation, we were really strong early on social media and email marketing and that kind of stuff. But as you've seen, I mean, the catalog is a big part of our marketing budget. And I truly feel that consumers are liking to remember the days when you got, you know, letters in the mail and you got handwritten cards in the mail and you got catalogs. And I remember getting catalogs when I was growing up, and that's kind of how I shopped. I got a catalog and circled what I wanted for Christmas and handed it to my mom. So I think there's some nostalgia there, and a big part of our brand is just authentic, nostalgic lifestyle. So it's been a big focus for me to do the catalog. Every time we have an event in the store, we send out paper invitations. I mean, we're really trying to make a meaningful connection in a world where everything's going so digital and you're losing that authentic connection with your customer.
Well, that's the, you talk about nostalgia. There's definitely a feel going into the Buckhead location, for instance, of, you know, this just, it feels like a very comfortable experience. Talk about that, that in-store client experience that you're really trying to create, because that's part of the brand as well as the qualitative soft side, I guess.
Right. No, absolutely. I mean, it's probably the most important part of the brand. That's really what makes it. It's just the environment that we've created. Like I said, put it this way. I've got married about a year and a half ago, and I think most people in our situation, you've got the guy not wanting to throw away his old neon beer sign and his deer heads and all this kind of stuff. And I've had a very happy, healthy marriage because I've got 10 places where I can decorate the way I want to. So, you know, my office and our warehouse and our stores are really all kind of, you know, they've been described as man caves, they've been described as trophy rooms, they've been described as you know, clubhouses, but it's right. Yeah, just creating this authentic kind of masculine environment, but you know, with a really clean focus on quality. But yeah, they've been great. And every store, a big focus for me is that my worst nightmare is for us to become somewhere where, you know, there's just a planogram and you walk in and everything, you know, you walk in the Buckhead store, it's the same as the Charlotte store. So what's cool right. about our stores is they're all unique and they're all authentic, and it gives you a reason that, you know, if you're a big fan of ours in Athens and you're going to be in D.C., like I want to go see the Honor Reserve in Georgetown because, you know, it's going to be different.
Right.
So that's been fun.
That's cool. You can't do it without an incredible team. And so many of, I think the challenge of a lot of entrepreneurs is, you know, working on the business instead of working in the business. And, you know, it sounds like you've brought a lot of people along with you. Talk about how that's developed over the years and where you found your best talent and most talented teammates.
That's, you hit the nail on the head with that one. Working on the business instead of in the business is probably one of the biggest challenges, because early on, and still, I mean, all I want to do is walk in the warehouse and pack boxes and, you know, write notes.
Some days it would be nice to do that for half a day, right?
I'll tell you, it's therapeutic. But, yeah, I mean, at some point along the line, I've got to realize that might not be the best use of my time. I think one of the things I've done well is really bringing on people that are far better at what they do than I am. We've got a fantastic team that's really, I hate to say lucky, because I'm a big believer in the fact that, you know, the luck doesn't really exist. It's just the intersection of preparation and opportunity. But mm-hmm. I think that I've been introduced to some people that were just fantastic individuals that I've hired at the time, not even knowing what we were going to have them do, but I just knew that they were the right fit. So we've brought on some people that have shifted roles around a little bit. That's kind of what's fun about being a fast-growing entrepreneurial company, is that there's always more opportunity. So there's opportunity for growth within the company. And I've got a fantastic retail director, got a fantastic creative director. We've got amazing store managers. It's really been a blast. I think probably the most fun is bringing people on and giving them an opportunity to excel. And we certainly could not have gotten here just based on my efforts. There's a lot of people involved that care about it. I think what's remarkable is we've got a lot of people involved that truly care about Honor Reserve as much as I do, and I think that's rare.
Yeah. There's also this, as you're kind of going so fast, there's this element of driving 100 miles an hour down the road and changing the transmission. Have you found that there are mentors or people that outside of the actual business that have really helped you along the way? And how have you cultivated those relationships?
Absolutely. And some of my closest mentors are really evolved out of people that were customers in the Athens store and have become awesome mentors for me. And I think part of what is so great about that is sometimes the best mentors aren't even in the fashion industry or in retail at all. But a guy named Terry Brown, who I met through UGA involvement, is recently left Edens to start a business called Asana Partners. And Edens was a massive retail real estate holding company. And so he brought a lot of interesting perspective from the real estate side. Robin Loudermilk was one of my early supporters here in Atlanta, and his experience running Aaron Rents has been a phenomenal resource for me. And you would never think, I mean, we're a high-end men's apparel shop, and they're, you know, a rent-to-own operation. But operationally, he's had a lot of really fantastic ideas. So it's been fun to kind of see, and there's really too many to mention, but different mentors with very different backgrounds. It's amazing to see how, business and general, you know, you're going through the same challenges no matter what you're doing.
Yeah. I've got to go back to the advertising thing, just because it's such a struggle for a lot of companies to, kind of combine the whole, or think about social media, the intersection of social media, email activity, in your instance, catalog and actual print activity, as well as, you know, sales and, you know, different drivers that you do through the year. Any advice for people on that side, you know, particularly on the social media and, you know, reaching millennials, reaching a different target market?
I think probably my statement on that is anybody that says they've got it figured out is either lying or insane because it's just changing so often. I mean, you look at when you talk about millennials and even, the mini generation right behind them, is you've got, 8 years ago, Facebook was where everybody was. Right. And then 2 years ago, Instagram was where everybody was. And now if you talk to somebody in high school, I mean, they're on Snapchat. Like, they don't really care about Instagram anymore. So,
right.
you know, social media is tough. I mean, it changes very rapidly. I think you've got a one of our friends in advertising told me you build sales overnight and you build brands over time. Mm-hmm. And I think that part of our focus is to not, I mean, you've always got to worry about sales and you're trying to drive awareness and you're certainly trying to drive revenue. But at the end of the day, that pales in comparison to building a brand. And that's what we've really tried to do is with things like the catalog, make sure that we've got a, I keep saying the word authentic, but just make sure we've got an authentic connection with consumers mm-hmm. that will actually create brand value in the long term.
So you've got the catalog, you've got the branded label offerings really kind of going in the direction that you want. What's that next foundational step as you think about building the brand over time?
I think expanding our label. What's amazing about, you know, the apparel business is certainly not the easiest business in the world. But what's great is if you can put together a collection of products that are of high quality and the fit's great and they're really consistent with the lifestyle that you're trying to build, then, you know, you've got somebody is being marketed to every day. I mean, they're pulling out that shirt and they've got a connection with it and they, you know, they're thinking about you more often. So that's something important. I think the expansion of our brand, we've got some cool partnerships working with some other retailers to provide our brand in some other markets where we don't have stores. The catalog will continue to expand. The website is a fantastic part of our business and we'll continue to grow that platform. Our goal there is to have just a best in class user experience, clean, simple, easy, always free shipping, free return shipping if it doesn't work out. You know, a true multi-channel retail platform where a customer can get what they want, how they want it, whenever they want it, mm-hmm. basically.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked a lot about brand. What about culture? You know, kind of turning inward to your own team. What are some of the you know, the cultural cornerstones that you as a firm are trying to create? I guess in some ways it's probably connected to your brand, but
yeah, you know, in a lot of ways it is. Culture is everything, pretty much, and I think a lot of culture is hard to articulate. Probably the most effective word to describe our culture would just be passion. I mean, I'm looking for, like I said, I've hired people before. I didn't even know what I wanted to have them do, but if they were passionate about the business, and or passionate about the brand, then I knew that they would be a fantastic addition. So, I think passion's what I'm looking for and mm-hmm. It's hard to fake. I mean, you know, if you're, like I said, when I was at the bank, I mean, I tried to get excited about it, but it just wasn't me. And that doesn't, you know, it's not a knock on banking, certainly. And right. it's, there's a lot of people that couldn't be passionate about what I do. But you know, challenging people to really just find their passion and run with it. And for me to find people whose passion is doing what we do is a big part of our culture.
Mm-hmm. One of the things we talked about coming in was, you know, resources for the entrepreneur. I guess one of the things that you've gotten plugged into is EO, Entrepreneurs Organization. How has that helped or, you know, is this, what have been the takeaways from being involved with that organization? We'll do a shout out to
yeah,
them.
No,
because, you know, so many of our guests, so many of the people that the best companies have some kind of support network, whether it be EO or Vistage or YPO or an internal board of directors.
I would be more than happy to plug EO, and they're not paying us for this or anything. I joined based on a recommendation from a mentor of mine, and it's been fantastic. I mean, I get reached out to by seemingly similar organizations all the time, but it was that personal recommendation that made me actually do it. And it's been one of the best things that I've done since I started the business. So we've got a forum of eight guys and girls that run incredibly impressive businesses all here in Atlanta in a wide range of types of business. And it's been a great forum for us to come and share our experiences. And like I said earlier, no matter what business you're in, you're going through some of the same challenges as it relates to growth or, you know, personnel or capital or, you know, what have you. Everybody's really, at the end of the day, everybody's going through the same stuff.
Right. You've shared a lot of business wisdom today. Tell us the best business advice that you ever received.
I think there's a guy named Earl Leonard who was a retired Coca-Cola executive that started a program at UGA called the Leonard Leadership Scholars. And he early on told me to ask why all the time. And just, you know, and I still think about that. I used it in a meeting yesterday, but just if you kind of go along with the status quo, then you're never going to really change anything. But if you're constantly asking why, it's like, all right, well, we do things this way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why? Because that, especially as we were talking about with social media and everything, it's changing so often. You know, what you started a year ago might be totally antiquated now. So asking yourself, you know, asking your team why we do things, asking yourself why you do things, it can be eye-opening.
Mm-hmm.
Another piece of advice, reaching out and cultivating mentor relationships and finding out how somebody got to where they are, whether it relates to your industry or not, is fantastic. And reading books about people. There's a book called Mr. Anonymous that's about Robert Woodruff, who was the chairman of Coca-Cola forever. And that's been a fantastic resource for me. I feel like he's a mentor. I never even met the guy. But reading books about impressive people and hearing their stories, mm-hmm, has been great.
You mentioned University of Georgia a couple times. They honored you with a 40 Under 40 recently. And
was exciting.
Your company's been perennially at the top of the Bulldog 100, which is the fastest growing companies. Talk about just your relationship with the college and how that's assisted your business, but also what's in the future there.
Right. So I graduated from UGA in 2007 and moved to Atlanta, and I was very involved with the Terry College. After I graduated, I was the chairman of the Young Alumni Board in, I don't know, call it 2009. I kind of lose track of time.
Yeah.
So I already had a pretty strong network of UGA grads that were all passionately involved in trying to make sure that UGA is the best place it could be. And then it was fun, and just there was no rhyme or reason. It just kind of happened this way. I mean, I moved back to Athens to start our website, and then the store happened to open there. So we've obviously, with our first store being a block away from campus, we've had a very natural relationship with UGA. We've obviously hired a ton of UGA students to work in the store, some of which have ultimately moved to Atlanta to work for us full time. I was surprised and honored to be named among the 40 under 40 a few years ago. I think I was 28 at the time, and I thought I was going to be the youngest one, but somebody cut me out. I think I was the second youngest one. And then last year we were named to the Bulldog 100, which was a really fun event and cool honor, and we were number two there. So
yeah,
I'm always second.
Like gunning for more. Yeah, that's
but,
right.
Well, that's a really cool event. It's in a big ballroom, and everybody, you find out that you made the list, but you don't know where you stand on the list. And then they count down from 100 to 1. And as they got to the top 10, I started looking around my table. I was like, all right, we'll take this. And then we got closer, and I think they got to number 3, and my father-in-law leaned over. He said, "Do you think they forgot you?" So it was fun. It was really a treat and a really fun way to celebrate all the work that we've done with some of our early investors and family and friends. So that the connection with UGA is a very authentic one that I have come to cherish.
That's great. TJ, what did you want to be when you were growing up?
I'm going to be real candid here. I wanted to be a doctor. And then I realized two things. I don't think I really three things maybe. I wasn't really sure I wanted to, you know, that I could deal with the blood. And
yeah, you didn't like the blood thing. Yeah.
And then secondly, I definitely didn't want to be in school for that long. And then I found out that investment bankers make a lot more money than doctors and don't have to go to as much school. So that's what I decided I wanted to do. And I, got out of school and did it. And I think I'm just a goal-oriented person. So it's like I spent my entire college career figuring out how I'm going to be an investment banker. And then I was one. And I was like, okay, well, what's next? I guess then I set out to be a client of an investment banker, which right. we're working on now. But there was, if you had told me 5 years ago that I would be doing what I'm doing, I would have laughed in your face. So who knows what I want? I don't know when I'm going to grow up or what I want to do. Right. But we're having a blast kind of trying to figure it out as we go.
That's great. And, what charities or other institutions are you guys as a company or individually interested in? I always find in these discussions that entrepreneurs are always giving back in some way. And
that's what's really actually probably one of the best things about being in this business is that you've got the opportunity to really get involved at the community level because it's meaningful from a business perspective. And we've done everything from, we do product donations to all kind of, different silent auctions or different events for schools or churches or community organizations, what have you. We've done some more substantial partnerships. This year was the first year we had a relationship with Cure Childhood Cancer, which is based here in Atlanta. And we did a limited edition button down for them, which we still have on our website. We've got a few left. If anybody is interested, they're $98.50 and 100% of the proceeds go to Cure's efforts. Mm. But that's just such a fantastic organization. And I've gotten to know those people and some of their board members better since we've gotten involved with them. But it's such a pleasure to be able to use the platform that we've built for good, and that we've found that always comes full circle. I mean, we'll make a substantial donation to that organization this year, which really makes me and our team feel great. I mean, if that's if you can't get behind trying to cure childhood cancer, I don't know what you can get behind. Right. It's a fantastic organization, and we're really honored to be a part of it. Everything from that, my mother has been a teacher at a small private school in Thomasville where I grew up for the last 35 years, and it's been great to get involved there. We're having an alumni event in our store for Atlanta grads of Brookwood next month, and, being able to buy ads in the athletic program and that kind of stuff. It's fun to just kind of give back to some of the places, that have helped me get to where I am now.
That's great. I want to thank you for joining us this morning. It's been really great to learn about your business and get your perspective on things. Tell our listeners how they can learn more about Onward Reserve and where exactly your locations are here in the Atlanta area.
Yeah, and first, thanks for having me. This has been a lot of fun. We are in Buckhead on Early Street, 3072 Early Street, which is right. If you're looking at the Whole Foods, it's to your right. It's the old, for people that have been in Atlanta very long, it's the old Pearson's Liquor Store building. But that's our corporate headquarters, and our store is there beneath. And then we are at Pont City Market, which everybody's familiar with, I think, at this point. That's been a really cool project. And then always online at onwardreserve.com. As I mentioned earlier, free shipping all the time. If you've got any problems, email me directly because we're constantly trying to improve. But we're on Instagram at Onward Reserve, obviously on Facebook. It's a fun way to kind of stay on top of what we've got going on and see if there's any specials coming out. And there's a link on the website to sign up for the catalog if, you know, if that's of interest.
Great. Well, again, thank you. This has been fantastic. Join us again next week for another Founders Club broadcast sponsored by Atlantic Capital Bank and powered by Business Radio X.